Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back to Paris History Advocate Hemingway, and today we are talking about the Palais Royal, and it's tucked away behind the Louvre. A lot of people don't find it. I love doing photo shoots in this pretty little park, but Claudine's going to give us all the history about it, and maybe you'll go find it and re-listen to this episode.
Yeah, you should go check it out. It is a really little beautiful kind of little oasis just in the middle of Paris, and it is just right off some very busy streets. But the Palais Royal, inside the Palais Royal, is the lovely Colonne de Borin when you walk in there. And this is where I'm sure you've also done a million photo shoots. It was created for the millennium. And it was, I always do that. It includes 260 black and white columns. It is created on the former parking lot that was there because it is the Minister of Culture. But I'll tell you more about the Palais Royal itself in a minute. It was in 1985, Jack Lang, who was the Minister of Culture at the time, talked to the French artist Daniel Borin. He wanted something that was going to be created, that was going to be, added there. There's all these different pieces that were added for the year 2000. François Mitterrand wanted a more modern art around Paris, which still, there's still people today that are ticked off about this, about anything that was new. But Daniel Borin was born in 1938. He began by basically being a street artist in Paris in the 1960s. He also would create posters. He ended up, he is still alive, and he is known for doing these kind of thick black and white awning stripes that you do see on the actual, on these columns today. There used to be water that would run underneath some of them. Some of them used to move up and down, but they don't do that anymore. It's in there in the middle of the Galerie d'Orléans, and then right next to it, there's two groups of 17 of these big, very shiny silver orbs that were added there as well during that time. And then you could also find some Arago markers, which if you watch the Da Vinci Code, that's kind of where people kind of know them from. They were done in 1994, added by a Dutch artist named Jean Dibert, and they dedicated to François Arago, who was the one that kind of was the one that first discovered the first meridian that went through Paris. Now it does, now they've moved it to the Greenwich, I think it's the Greenwich Meridian. But there's 135 of them placed across the city. You find some of them in the Palais Royal. They even find some of them inside the Louvre.
Whoa.
Which I love. So the Palais Royal itself originally was the Palais Richelieu. It was built by Cardinal Richelieu, who was under Louis XIII. He was incredibly, incredibly powerful. He was the one who Marie de Medici hated and was always trying to oust him, which ended up getting her ousted a few times. But he was incredibly, incredibly powerful. He wanted to have something built that could house his entire art collection and statuary, but also be really close to the Louvre. So because we are right across from the Louvre, in 1624, he bought the Hotel de Rambouillet and ended up having it rebuilt and changed into the Palais Cardinal. At the time, it was up against the defensive wall of Paris that was at the Porte Saint-Honoré of the Charles V wall. And if you walk just down the street on Rue Saint-Honoré, you do see a plaque where also is where we just talked about her in the last week. Jeanne d'Arc is where she was actually captured by the British.
What?
Yeah. So Jacques Le Mercier was an architect. He worked on the building, adding all of these different new portions of it. From 1624 to 1642, the work continued. But today, the only thing that remains of it is the Valois wing of it, which is kind of in the back corner of where the columns are. After the death of Richelieu, he left the palace to Louis XIII, as you would have to do. In 1642, Anne of Austria and her son, Louis XIV, and Philippe moved into there, moved away from the Louvre across the street, and then they moved there and they changed it to the Palais Royal. For a short period of time, it became the Academy, the Royal Academy of Painting and Sculpture, which then ended up moving into the Louvre. The Cardinal gradually originally wanted to build this to his vast art collection, which most of it today, you could see a lot of that actually in the Louvre today, especially all of his statues that were later, we talked about when we talked about Ile Saint-Louis, that were later destroyed by his, it was his nephew and Mazarin's niece, the two powerful cardinals. And the nephew was a little crazy and jealous and decided one day to just lop off all of the naughty bits of these statues. And you can still see them repaired now in the Louvre, which is really cool. In the beginning of the 18th century, it ended up being called the Palais d'Orléans. Louis XIV gave it to his brother, Philippe d'Orléans. And Philippe ended up adding there, most of what you see today. So most of the structure dates back to that 18th century. On April 6, 1763, a fire destroyed the opera house that was there and portions of the Palais Royal. During the Revolution, the Palais Royal was a site of cafes where people gathered and basically they plotted for the revolution. But it also has a whole other side of it because when it was under, when it was the Palais d'Orléans, because it was a royal structure, the police weren't allowed to come there. So under Philippe, he would have these like parties and this is where prostitution was and gambling and all of like, you know, these bad things that happened during the night were going on there. And the police couldn't come in. This is where they say that Napoleon lost his virginity.
What?
Yeah, he lost his virginity here. And so it just had this whole period of time. And so it really kind of started to fall into disrepair as well. Now, you know, it's probably one of the many sought after locations to live in that area because it is absolutely beautiful. The trees, when you go down the side of it on either side, when you go through the first part where the columns are, which is right at the edge. So it actually backs up and kind of starts at the Place Colette. The Place Colette is also where you have that beautiful metro structure that was done by Jean-Michel Otignal for the year 2000. And it is all done out of Murano glass, big, huge beads. One of them is in shades of blue, and that is dedicated to the night. And the other piece of it is red and dedicated to the day, which is kind of a little nod back to the history of the Palais Royal being, you know, at night when it was naughty. But it's a really, really beautiful structure. Jean-Michel Otignal, he is a contemporary artist. He also did these really beautiful prints that were done for the Louvre for the 30th anniversary of Iampe's pyramid that they decided to keep, and they are in the Corps Puget of the Louvre, and they're really beautiful. I love them. Place Colette is named, of course, for the artist Colette, which we'll talk about. But it's also on the edge of one of my favorite places, La Numars, which is a wonderful, wonderful cafe that you have taken pictures at a million times. And it is one of those cafes of Paris. It's probably on Instagram 400 times a day. But it is one of my favorites for many, many reasons.
I mean, why wouldn't it be?
I know. So we're being vague on that. I have a very special reason why I love it, but it is, the Place Colette is really, and you know, that whole area, sometimes, on like some nights in the spring and summer, because it's right on the edge of the Comédie de Française. They just set up these speakers and there's people doing tango and dancing in the front of it between Neumar and the Palais Royal. So it's really, really neat. It's up from any time of the day. I love to go there in the morning before I go to the Louvre, and have my cafe crème and tartine. Mm-hmm. And then it's busy during lunch. It's busy. It is always busy there. And it is a really great little place to sit and enjoy watching the people dance.
Who doesn't want to watch them dance? I love when they dance along the sun too.
Yeah, there's way down to we did a live walk at the Jardin des Plantes, and there was a couple. I did a bunch of caught a bunch of the people dancing down there. It was really fun.
So cute.
But when you walk back into the back side of the garden, which is the longer side of it, there are, if you look at the trees that go on either side, and they are now named, a couple years ago, they changed it. So they named them after, there's the Allée Cateau, named after Jean Cateau, and the other one named after Colette, because they were two very famous residents of the Palais Royal. But if you stop and look, the columns of the Palais Royal line up. They planted the trees to line up with the columns. And these are those little things about Paris that you might not notice, but for some reason, to your eye, they just look perfect and they're lovely. So it's really cool to see that they, you know, these are the things they think of that you don't notice, where they're like, let's plant these trees so they're in line with all the columns.
Yeah. So I love all the parallels.
Yeah, those trees were originally laid out in 1910. They were replaced eventually with red horse chestnut trees that line up with each of the columns. There's 500 trees and lime trees later and also around there. But the horse chestnut, a couple weeks ago, it was almost impossible to breathe in Paris because the pollen was so high in there. Also there, you might notice a very tiny cannon that is there in the middle of the grass. You can't walk up to it. There's two parts of, there's two little grassy spots. Both of them are fenced off that you can't go on, but each one of them at the end of them has like a little seated area. This little tiny cannon was designed by Rousseau, who was a watchmaker whose shop was in the Palais Royal. And he originally did this as kind of just a gimmick for his watch shop. It's this little tiny cannon. Every single day it would fire at noon because the sun would hit the glass and light a wick that would set off the cannon. It set time for all of France for 20 years. This is how they basically set watches. And each year they do still fire it off on Patrimoine weekend at a few times during the day. And I've got to stand there and watch it. And first time I was like, what is that noise? Like you just hear this like boom. And it's this little, I mean, the cannon itself is probably 7 inches long. I mean, it's not very big, but it doesn't sound off every single day at noon anymore, but it does just on that one weekend a year, which is kind of cool.
I never noticed the cannon.
Yeah, I noticed it long ago and I was like, what in the heck is that thing? But not really thinking, it looked like almost like it was some sort of like a bronze urn that held flowers at an angle.
Yeah. It's like, why'd that thing fall over?
Yeah. The garden itself, the original garden was designed by André Le Nôtre, who was an amazing landscape designer who first did stuff for Nicolas Fouquet, who did Vaux-le-Vicomte, who we all know then Louis XIV stole over and had him do Versailles. He also did the Tuileries. The two alleys of the trees were, as I mentioned, were renamed for Cocteau and Colette. Cocteau lived there from 1941 to 1963 on the west side running, that's the side that alley Colette is named at, Cocteau. On the other side, the eastern side, is named after Colette, and that is basically underneath her window that she could look out. She used to say she loved to sit up there and just look out the window for hours. The benches under the trees have now been changed as well, and they're marked with the different words of these very famous French authors. Colette lived there from 1938 to 1954. She actually lived there twice, two different times in her life. She loved to look over the treetops. when you stand there and you look up, you actually see a very small bronze marker underneath what was her window. Her third husband, Maurice Gudeck, who lived there with her, and we did a podcast episode like 2 years ago about her. She's pretty amazing character. He was Jewish, and during the war, he actually would hide, and he would hide in the attic and the rafters of the Palais Royal. She would basically ended up sitting there and looking out the windows when everything he was taken at one point that we talked about in the episode. And then she ended up using some of her contacts. Some of her German contacts were huge. Some German, the wives of some German high-ranking officers, because they were big fans of her. And so she was able to basically broker with them to get him out. But then he had to basically keep hidden away until the end of the war.
It worked.
It worked. But also in this, and also it has to do with Colette, is one of the oldest restaurants in all of Paris. And this one actually is. Most of them, when they say they're the oldest, as we've talked about, it's not. But is the Grand Véfour. And the Grand Véfour dates back to 1760. It was originally called the Café de Chartres. And when you look at it, it says it over some of the windows. The Petit Véfour was in the Galerie de Valois. And it wasn't doing so well. So Jean Véfour took over the Chartres, and the original was much larger than what we see today. This is also where Napoleon proposed to Josephine. So in the Palais Royal, he lost his virginity and then ended up proposing to the love of his life in the same structure.
sentimental value.
Yeah, but the Grand Véfour is amazing. And my very first trip to Paris, I went there for lunch. And I did it. My grandmother on my very first trip gave me some money to do something special with. And I decided that is what I was going to do. It was over 400 euros for two people to have lunch.
Wow.
But I will remember it forever. And it was a very special thing to do at least once when you were there because, and this was, you know, years and years ago, I had done research about the restaurant and inside of it, it's these beautiful red. And if you saw Midnight in Paris, the first time he eats with her family, they go to the Grand Véfour. It's beautiful inside. It is surrounded around the edges of by these red velvet banquettes. And on the back of each seat is a little brass plaque. And that is who sat there. And there is the seat that says Napoleon and the one that says Josephine. And that's where I really wanted to sit. And we walked in and I was like, oh, where am I going to get to where I get to sit? And they ended up sitting me in the Colette seat, which I was pretty excited about because Colette wrote the books about Claudine, the four books that she, you know, had to write under the guise of her husband, Willie, at the time. But when I was little, I didn't like my name because it was so different. And my grandmother gave me these Claudine books. And it was because of that that I ended up kind of deciding, hey, my name is pretty cool.
I mean, I think you were supposed to be sat there.
I was. So it was really cool. And so the story is that she lived above and she was very old at this point. But she would go down there. The servers would go up to her apartment upstairs and down the way, pick her up in a chair, carry her down the stairs in this chair, and bring her into the restaurant and seat her into this spot.
She must have been very skinny and frail.
Yeah, well, she was little. Like, she was kind of short, too. But it was here also that Julia Child came when they first arrived in Paris. They also ate there. And she saw Colette and called her the Grand Colette being brought down in her chair.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, Sartre was there. Victor Hugo would go there. Of course, Cocteau would go there. The chef and owner of it is Guy Martin. He is amazing. And when I went, he came walking out and said hello. He's like on TV and he has all these restaurants and stuff, but it was pretty cool. The food was amazing. The cheese cart alone, when they brought that out at the end, and I just was like, one of everything, please. It was just the most amazing thing. What was really cool is when we were there, the table next to us, sitting at the Napoleon and Josephine table, were these two businessmen, and they ended up getting this bottle of wine, and I was watching the server, and you could tell it was a very, very old bottle. And they were trying, like the server was very gingerly trying to open it and being very careful. And I just like my eyes were glued to just watching this whole scene. And they ended up pouring it and it looked like gold. It looked like liquid gold. And the gentleman looked over at me and he was like, would you like a glass? And I was like, oh, no, merci. And my friend was like, what? what are you doing? Say yes. And I just was like, no, I just felt, you know, I was just like, you know, thank you very much, but no. And they ended up sending it over anyway.
Oh, it was,
A 1980 Sontero. So it's that more of that very thick dessert wine. It literally was like drinking honey. And it, but it was amazing. And then on the other side of us were these two other gentlemen. They were partners. They had come, they were English. They came over on the Eurostar, and they said they do it every 6 months just to go and eat there because there's nothing like that in London.
What?
And then they were like the whole time. And then they were like, oh, what is that? And they ended up, the two gentlemen gave him some too, because it's not, you're not going to finish. If you finish a bottle of that as two people, you would not be feeling great. It's so sugary. It's so like, it's a dessert wine. And so, but these gentlemen, they were so nice, and they shared it with us, and they shared it with the other table. And it was just this unforgettable, just absolutely lovely, wonderful, lunch. But now, because of COVID, after COVID, they ended up, because, you know, when you couldn't eat inside, so they are underneath the columns there. So they set up a whole area to sit outside. You actually could go there now, and get, you know, you could kind of just order off of the menu, and there's some much less expensive items. But if you're going to go, you kind of want to go sit inside because it's beautiful inside. Sitting outside, it's not the same. You're not going to get all of that, you know, history and everything in there. And it's really, really cool. So if you have a chance, definitely go, you know, save up and go for lunch, because it's, you could have the same amazing experience and it's less money. But it's definitely something that I am happy I did and do it. Love
it. I'm going to do it once. You convinced me. I'm sold.
Yeah. It's really cool. We'll have to go.
Yeah.
But also around there, just right outside the Palais Royal, is another one of my favorite restaurants called Willie's Wine Bar. It opened over 40 years ago. It was one of the very first wine bars in Paris. Mark, who is English, and he is an absolutely wonderful man. Willie was his dog. That's where it's Willie's Wine Bar. The food is always amazing. You could go there and get like a 3-course lunch. And it's, I think, like 28 euros. And then paired with amazing wine. It is, you know, a lot of the people work there speak English because it's a lot of British people that work there, because he is originally from England. But it's really great. I've never had a bad meal there. I've probably eaten there 40 times. It's always amazing. But one thing they do that I love is every year they do a special poster. And during COVID, it was really funny because, you know, all of these TV reporters were working from home, and he was constantly on Instagram. People were spotting his posters in the background of like some CNN reporter doing a remote in his apartment. And so there was like this big thing. He kept sharing them on Instagram. It was pretty funny. But he works with a different artist. One of my very favorites, Jean-Charles de Cassebajac, who's the one who goes and puts all of the chalk angels around the streets of Paris. He did one. There is another one that's kind of a take on Liberty Leading the People. The newest one that just came out recently was done by Mark's daughter. And it's kind of, and also it's an homage, and a lot of the profits are dedicated to Ukraine. But it's really, really cool. And that is one of the very first things that I'm going to do when I officially am living there in a few months, is going there, and I'm going to buy my Jean-Charles de Cassebajac and paint my the huge poster and frame it.
I think that's a great idea. It's so beautiful. What a great idea to do a different one every year.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And you could go in there and you could see all of them are hanging on the walls. And I'll put a link. He did a couple years ago, right before COVID, he did a whole book about the 40 years of Willie's Wine Bar. It has wonderful stories in it and recipes and things in it. It's really, really great. And he very graciously gave me a copy of it. But when I do my planning for clients, I tell everybody needs to go there. It's one of my favorite places to go. If I'm at the Louvre, sometimes I'll go there just for lunch. It's really great. The wine is great. The people are great. And the food is always fantastic.
And do you need a reservation, or can you just sneak in?
You know, if you're, you know, for one of those things, if you're just one or two people, usually, you know, if you go there, like right around 12, 15, you usually could get in without a problem. If you have more than two people, I would but definitely say get a reservation, but you're okay getting a reservation just a day or two out. And for dinner too, he also opened kind of a little cove that's just down this, down a couple doors down, that also you could go and sit. It's a little bit even more informal. It's not a big fancy, like stuffy place at all. But it's really, really lovely. And if you go there, Mark is a very fantastic, wonderful gentleman, and tell him that I sent you.
We will do that. You're sold me on both those restaurants.
Yeah, they're very different, different levels of price tags for sure. But both of them are fantastic. And also, of course, the third one, La Noumar. And you go there and see Mont Antony.
Your favorite place.
I know that and Le Vin Comtois. Those are my favorites.
The best.
But it is beautiful. It's a beautiful area. I first discovered Palais Royal on my very first trip to Paris when I left Paris to go to Italy with my friend that lived in Italy. And then I decided, I don't like this, and decided to come back to Paris. And I did it by myself. And so I had found a hotel that was on the Rue de Richelieu, which is runs right next to the Palais Royal. I ended up, because I was like, well, this is where we stayed. We were or not in that hotel, but in that area. I was coming back by myself, and I thought, hey, you know, I'll go to some, you know, I already kind of know that area. I was a little worried to do it by myself, and I went back there. And on that first night, I ended up going, what's this little doorway go to? And it came down to the side of the Palais Royal, and I walked in, and I just was like, oh, because the parks of Paris and the places like that really are the living room for the French, because their apartments are so tiny, as you know. And so these are great little places for people just to go and sit. And I still love to go in there and sit around the basin, which, you know, was sitting there with a book. And I love to count how many French people are sitting there reading an actual book or a newspaper, which is something you don't see in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just on their phones. It is kind of this quiet little oasis that's, you know, On one side, you're very close to the Rue de Rivoli, and it's very noisy. And then the other side, you have the Rue de Richelieu. So you're in the middle, like the Palais Royal sits in the middle of some very busy areas. But when you walk in there, just everything is just silent and disappears.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's a great note to end on, that everyone go there, check it out, and check out ClaudineHemingway.com.
Thank you for listening to Paris History avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's B-L-E-U, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at ClaudineHemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.